Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Today is Tuesday. It is the 19th of October, 2021. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Dave Hamilton. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
Glad you're here. And also with me today to face off against Dave, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Kelly.
Thanks for having us.
I'm glad both of you are with me today. We're here to talk about, at a slightly slower pace than yesterday's event, talk about yesterday's event. So I think first we should spend a minute on, like, it felt like it went really fast.
I feel like I need to watch it again. I was saying that to my wife last night. It went so fast. I know I missed things. I mean, I always miss things because we're not just sitting there watching. We are covering the event, right. You know, and so we're trying to take notes and also publish like screenshots and things like that. So I know I missed things, but I feel like there just weren't nearly as many moments to breathe. And so I get why Apple wanted to keep this one short because they just had an event, you know, a month ago.
Yep.
However, I am a big fan of them doing these remote events. I don't want to call them virtual because it's still an event.
Yes.
But I am a big fan of these, and I'm becoming of the camp that they probably shouldn't resume ever doing them in person. However, I think yesterday's erred on the side of going too fast.
Okay. And as a person who has been to them and gotten to attend the little hands-on area after the fact, does that seem like a fair trade?
Well, it
does to me because I never got to go touch stuff. So.
Going and being able to see things is a great way to get those immediate questions answered. And I think there may be a benefit in that from Apple's standpoint in terms of people not misinterpreting how things might be, right? Because if you can go touch it, it's like, okay. Or like, you know, when the first thin iMac came out, they were super, you know, they were talking a lot about how great the, you know, the thin edge of the bezel was, but it had this huge bulbous thing on the back of it, right? And so it was still 4 inches deep. This is years ago, right? And being able to go, like, watch the presentation and then go see it and look at it on the side was like, okay, so this isn't, like, as thin as you were trying to convince us or as thin as I misinterpreted, but now I know, right? And it kept those misinterpretations from spreading too far and too wide. So I think there's a little bit of benefit there. I'm not convinced Apple would agree that it's worth it to ever have people in person. They can ship hardware to folks that they want to have touch it.
That's true.
Yeah, the anointed few. Plus, the engineers, usually, that were, and, you know, designers, I guess, in some cases, and probably coders too, were, although they're engineers, were taking their time out to do that stuff. And that included, like, you know, training time on how to deal with the media and, like, all kinds of, those are very expensive events from Apple's standpoint. And while Apple does have all of the money, I don't know that it's really worth it to Apple to be pulling all of those professionals away from making things.
Sure. Yeah, it's a talent cost, not just a financial cost. And I realize you can trace everything back to the almighty dollar, right? But still, to take someone who is developing this stuff and, like you said, have to train them to go deal with this and coach them, it's not just like, all right, let's set up a camera, tell me what you did, and we can edit. If you say the wrong thing, it's no problem. So, yeah, I don't think we're going back to in-person announcements from Apple. I think we will have, and I could be wrong about this, I think we'll have an in-person WWDC again in the future.
Oh,
again,
sure.
I could be, well, I don't know that that's a no sure, but I think there's a greater chance of that than there is of having in-person media events.
Yeah. Well, I think there will be in-person, but I think Apple has definitely seen the benefit of we do everything online, but I think there's probably going to be some component that is in-person, and maybe they'll just start live streaming the keynote and then, you know, get that off Tim's plate every June Monday and then, you know, go from there or something. I don't know. But I feel like the in-person piece is definitely coming back. I don't know when, but it will, and it just won't look quite the same as it did before, and it'll be sort of somewhere in between Dub Dub 2019 and Dub Dub 2020. That's my assessment on that. One of the things sort of talked about in the off the air was partly what we didn't see yesterday, and also how the things that we did get a good look at yesterday might shape the future of what we see from Apple going forward. Does that sound about right, Brian?
So the thing we didn't get were iMacs, and not that there were a lot of leaks, rumors, predictions that there would be iMacs, but I was certainly hoping that we would get the large iMac to go along with the redesign of the 24-inch iMac that was released earlier this year. And in that, I really want an M processor iMac on my desk, and especially if it has a larger display. I was really looking forward to that, but we didn't get it. And here's the thing, though. We did get these two glorious new processors. Mm-hmm. Do you both agree that they're glorious new processors?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And then we got those for the mobile line. It got me sort of thinking about what the processors that will eventually go into the iMac, which would then be a precursor to what we'll eventually see in the Mac Pro, what they might actually look like. And in particular, Apple has always offered less RAM in its MacBook Pros than it does as an option, at least for iMacs. And since the M1 Max and M1 Pro are both limited, is it 32 and 64 gigs? Is that right?
You can get 16 on the minimum and up to 64 on the M1 Max. Correct.
And 32 on the M1.
32 is the limit on the Pro. Correct.
And so I don't think we're going to see an iMac come out with just the M1 Max and or M1 Pro as options. But I'm guessing that we'll end up seeing 128 gig option. Don't know what it would be called. Maybe the M1 Max Plus.
I don't think that's the reason we didn't get iMacs yesterday, Brian.
I don't know if it's the reason. I'm not so concerned about it. That being the reason is more like thinking about what might come.
Yeah, but so let me say this differently. I think we will see iMacs with the M1 Pro and M1 Max as options exactly the same way that we're seeing them with the MacBook Pros that were announced yesterday. And that's what I say. I don't think
you think 64 gigs would be the max option with the M processor line of iMacs.
Correct. I think it, yeah, because RAM is different in the M series Max than it is in things prior, right? The system handles it differently. It's this unified memory. Virtual memory works way faster than it used to, because also on that, SoC, the system on the chip, is the SSD controller and the SSD itself. So you get a much faster bus where you can move data around. And so virtual memory, while still, of course, slower than physical RAM, although even those definitions start to get to be a little blurred, it works way more efficiently than what we are used to from the Intel architecture that Apple had implemented previously. So I 64 gigs is a ton of RAM, and especially the way think about the general consumer for a 27-inch iMac. It's probably less of a pro than the person who's buying a 16-inch MacBook Pro. It's more this is what I want to have on my desk when I don't have my MacBook Air person out there, right? Mm-hmm. So,
but the pros are also buying iMacs.
Correct. And they could choose not to if they feel like there's a better option with Intel or something like that. But the iMac is, I think the reason for us not seeing the iMac yesterday, I think they're twofold. Number one, they wanted to keep that event short. And number two, there's a CPU shortage, right? So and Apple's chips. having there's a there's a sourcing issue, right? Yeah, chips in general. I shouldn't just say CPU. You're right, Kelly. Yeah, it's a chip shortage. So having, they needed to get, they chose to prioritize these laptops, which make perfect sense. Mm-hmm. They sell way more laptops than they do iMacs. So great. Although I'm wondering if the changes in work from home with the pandemic have tipped those scales like that.
I wonder that, but anyway. Too. I actually have a couple iMac related questions. I think the chip thing, Dave, is spot on, and part of the reason I think that is because we know that Tim Cook came up as one of the people in charge of the supply chain at Apple, and was one of the reasons that anybody was able to get an iPhone on launch day for a few years and all that kind of stuff. So I think there's a lot to that. But right now, before we talk about iMac speculation, I want to take a minute and talk to you about our sponsors this week. And our first sponsor is ZocDoc. ZocDoc allows you to compare doctors by rating and by reading reviews from actual patients. Just download the free ZocDoc app. It's the easiest way to find a great doctor and instantly book an appointment. With ZocDoc, you can search for highly rated local doctors who take your insurance and book in-person or video appointments. And not just for primary care. You can find a dentist, a psychiatrist, an eye doctor, or loads of other kinds of specialists as well. ZocDoc makes healthcare easy. Now's the time to prioritize your health. Go to ZocDoc.com/TDO and download the ZocDoc app to sign up for free and book a top-rated doctor. Many years are available as soon as today. That's ZocDoc.com/TDO. And we'd like to thank ZocDoc for sponsoring the show today. Now, our second sponsor today is Hunter Douglas. Now, Hunter Douglas can help you live in comfort and style with their innovative window shade designs and control systems that can be scheduled to automatically adjust to the right position throughout the day. Hunter Douglas shades can diffuse harsh sunlight, allow you to enjoy the view outside the window while protecting your privacy, and even keep the temperature inside warmer in winter and cooler in summer, which can lower your utility bills. Add that to Hunter Douglas's PowerView technology, and your shades can do all of this for you throughout the day. You know I'm a fan of that, right? So live beautifully with Hunter Douglas and enjoy greater convenience, style, and increased comfort in your home all day long. To do this, go to hunterdouglas.com/TDO today to take advantage of the Season of Style rebate savings event. That's HunterDouglas.com/TDO. HunterDouglas.com/TDO for limited time savings. That offer expires December 6th, 2021. I'd like to thank Hunter Douglas for sponsoring the show today. Now, the first question I have for both of you about the iMacs is the following question. Do you, Brian, you were saying that we normally don't get more RAM in the laptops than we do in the desktops. And that's been true for the Intel models. But what I'm wondering is, do we know if 64 is the max that these processors will take?
We don't know.
We don't know, but that was how it was pitched by Apple without Apple explicitly saying so. At least that's what I heard.
Okay.
That's what I heard. Maybe someone else heard something else.
Yeah, no, I think it's a fair interpretation. I mean, we know, taking what we know from the M1, where the SoC essentially came from an iPad, right? It was sort of morphed from there, and so it was limited at 16. And these would have this upper limit that would seem artificially low when we compare to our we're used to Intel brains because of many decades. But yeah, it's not as low as we think it is.
Well, that's the other piece of it is, 16 gigabytes of memory in one of these is like having 32 in an Intel machine or whatever. We don't have any comparisons for these new chips yet. One thing I do remember is a lot of people whose business is to be unimpressed by new computing hardware, were pretty impressed with the initial M1, which, you know, which, like you said, was just an iPad in a laptop body. So my other question, again for Brian, you put MacBook Pro and iMac really close together in the same sentence earlier, and it reminded me, do you think that this means we're going to get a new iteration of the iMac Pro now that we have actual chips that look like pro level computing could happen in an iMac?
No.
Okay, then.
No, I don't think, I think the iMac Pro is gone. It was a stopgap while waiting for the Mac Pro. And I think if anything, we'll just simply see pro like power in the offered in the iMac. And I have a dollar that says that we will get some slightly different iteration, or at least some different options on the M processor that'll eventually be in the larger iMac. Anybody want to take my dollar?
I got your dollar. Yeah, yeah. In fact, I'll counter that dollar by saying that the new iMac, and of course we're skipping, we haven't even discussed the fact that there's a Mac Pro and a Mac Mini in the lineup that might want to see an upgrade like we're talking about here too.
Right.
Just to keep those people who are beating on their steering wheels from hurting themselves too much.
We know there's more machines. It's okay.
I will take that dollar, Brian. And I will add to it that I think we will get the iMac, whatever it is, the replacement for the 27-inch iMac announcement. That might be a 27. It might be a 30. Whatever that is, I think we will get via press release on some random Tuesday, and I think it will happen before the end of the year.
Oh.
I would, if it's going to happen by press release, if it's going to happen before the end of the year, it will probably be by press release.
Yeah, I think we get it before the end of the year, but they want to sell these laptops to people that want these laptops, and they don't want to have to assign those chips to iMac. So they will let the first week of this go, and then maybe in 2 or 3 weeks, we see the iMac press announcement come out. That's I am very much of the belief that these chips are more than what the 27-inch iMac replacement needs. Quite frankly, the M1 was pretty close to what the 27-inch iMac replacement would have needed.
Yeah.
And these chips, I don't know how much you talked about it yesterday, but these chips are more similar than they are different, but there are some differences, of course.
Yeah.
So
The thing I noticed about it yesterday was mostly that I was sort of glad that it felt like the MacBook Pro was a pro machine again, because it didn't have exactly the same processor as the MacBook Air. And we're finally getting sort of a gap in the product line again, which is good because the Air is a really good tool for some people and the Pro is a really good tool for some people. And a 16-inch machine with the M1 Max in it is a very good tool for some people. And it's all about the right tool for the job. And for a while, it sort of seemed like there was a lot of blurring of those lines, and like, whichever machine you get, it's fine. And now it seems like they've actually started making pro machines again for pro users or prosumers or whatever the catchy term is for people who think that they're pro users who actually are not. I don't know what you call them. But
so here's my
podcasters. I don't know.
Here's my issue with that is a lot of people looked at it that way. I think that is a biased view. If you took a look at what happened with the M1, is you're right that the M1, I mean, there was the Mini, the Pro, and the Air, and they all had exactly the same chip inside them, right? And so they all ran at the same speed. Effectively, it could be argued that it might be a thermal ceiling, but nobody that I know has found it. So they really did run the same chip.
Mm-hmm.
And whether or not they had a fan didn't seem to matter all that much. And because they all ran the same chip, and because this was replacing what prior to it was the low-end MacBook Pro, it became seen by many as, oh, the Pro isn't a Pro, it's, you know, equal to the Air. Well, if you look at the Geekbench scores for the 16-inch Intel MacBook Pro, which came out just not a year before the M1 MacBook Pro, it topped out at 6,980. The fastest CPU that you could put in that thing topped out at 6,980.
Okay.
If you take that M1 chip, doesn't matter if it's in an Air or a Pro or a Mini, it tops out at $7,369. So what happened was that the Air became a Pro machine,
right?
At least in 2020. Mm-hmm. And then it was time, to your point, it was time to, you know, go up from there. But the question is, who needs to go up from there? I know a lot of people think they need to go up from there. And there are certainly some people that are correct in that thinking. But for many people who were using correctly a MacBook Pro prior to the M1 coming out, an Air would now do just fine for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and looking at, as I was looking at the pricing, and I did, I ordered a 14-inch Pro yesterday because I want to check this thing out. But as I was looking at the pricing, it was like, that's double what I would need to spend on a computer, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't, I like, were it not for my job here and wanting to be able to experience this and know the difference and be able to talk about it on the show and all that good stuff, I definitely would just buy the Air. It would be more than enough for everything that I do, because right. It already is more than enough for everything I do. I have one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing that, well, that's the thing I was wondering about, just because of capability and all of that. And like, initially the Air was marketed as your satellite machine. It was your ancillary, like, I live in front of another computer all day long, and now look at this one that I just pulled out of a manila envelope. Isn't that amazing? And it was amazing. I was there. And that's the reason I was curious about it, is because I've just always sort of thought of the Air as that sort of lighter weight machine, not just because of the name, but because it was always sort of geared that way. It was never a top of the line processor. You could never max out the RAM like you could in a Pro. It was sort of meant to be a super duper mobile machine that you take to a conference or take to a temporary thing where you're going to primarily be mobile. And that was like the whole point of it. So I always thought of it as somehow different from the Pro, and maybe that's all changed. And maybe I'm the only one that thinks that now. I don't know.
No, you're not the only one that thinks that, but you just explained the biased thinking that brought us all into, you know, where we were last year when these machines were announced. And it does take a reset of the head in a lot of ways. Our RAM expectations,
yeah.
What an Air versus a Pro, and what our own workflow versus Pro or not Pro dictates, right? And to yeah. your point, Brian, the iMac Pro is suffering. I think you're absolutely correct that we will never see an Apple Silicon iMac Pro, at least not in the next 4 years. I mean, who knows what yeah. you know, down the road has, but with where we are right now, I think you're absolutely right. The iMac Pro was kind of a ham-fisted thing to say, we got you, when they didn't quite have you. But now they got you with
they said that outright.
That's true. That's fair. they were trying to hide that.
And they were, it was true until it wasn't, right? So that's going to do it for us today, Dave. I look forward to the report on your new laptop. And for people playing along at home, I did go take a peek. And if what you want is sort of the standard spec on either the 14-inch or the 16-inch, they will, if you order it today, it can be delivered to you the second week in November. So it's really not that far off if you wanted one November 10th to November 17th. That's going to do it for us today. Like I said, thanks so much to Dave and Brian for being here. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other, and let's be careful out there.